opposite of Tochen, solidify a little bit our understanding of the nature of the Yisur of Tochen. And as we mentioned, one of the topics I want to get to today is to pay a little more attention to the concept of Ein Tochen Acher Tochen, to the extent that it exists. And I do want to talk about that, but before that, just to discuss for a few more minutes the idea that we left off with last week. We talked about, for example, the Rugged Shavuot. We looked at the Tzachnas Paneach and Hilchos Shabbos. We had the newly available edition, but it's an idea that's been around for a while, that perhaps the definition of Tochen is not simply cutting something into two parts, but redefining something. And at least in its fundamental sense, let's say in its ob sense, when you convert something into something else through the process of breaking it up, maybe that is what is really Tochen. So therefore, let's assume for a minute that we can talk about Sidur D'Pas as being actual bread. So then a good example is the one that comes out of that context, the conversion of grain to flour, of chitin to kemah. So since there, the act of tochen really transforms its identity, that, the way the Rugged Shavuot understood the Rambam, that would be the core definition of what tochen is.
Hi. This would only be the av.
It would sound like that would be the av. It would sound like the toldos, perhaps, within this theory, the toldos don't seem to necessarily conform to that. Maybe that's why they're toldos. So simply cutting up a vegetable into smaller pieces, perhaps that's not automatically an av. We saw the Rambam seems to call that a tolda, and other Rishonim seem to call it a tolda. And our Gemara is not clear. Our Gemara, in its primary source on Ayin Dalet, gives us really two examples of tochen, and it's not clear if either of them are the av, because they both have this language, mishum tochen, and as we've seen in the past, it's an ambiguous language. It may indeed, according to the understanding of some, refer to a tolda. So if we say that it's a tolda specifically, so then it could reflect this idea, that if you're not really transforming one thing into something else, but you're doing the elements of what sometimes does that, you're breaking something up, so and especially you're breaking something up to make it usable, so that's significant, but it's not a new identity, so maybe that's a tolda of tochen.
Hi. Is he limited to Gidula Karka, or is it everything overall?
So it's not necessarily the case that it's only in Gidula Karka. We saw that there is some ambiguity within that issue as well, whether or not we limit Gidula Karka in general. But even if we do, it's possible that we limit it, and that does sound to be the case in Halakha L'maisa. But even within that view, we probably only do that within Ochlin. It seems there are different types of Tochen. So Tochen Ochlin is Gidulei Karaka, while other types of Tochen, possibly not. So this type of distinction is interesting and is useful to keep in mind. And it could be that we see echoes of it in other places. For example, the Egwe Tal discusses the question, why is it that when it comes to Tochen, so we have a view in Rishonim, which doesn't seem to be the way we discussed yesterday, doesn't seem to be that this is followed by Halacha, but maybe it's the view of Tosfos, right, that Tochen only applies with something that's not Nechal Chai, right, something that is not edible in its state right now, has to be cooked, and it's only such foods that have an Isser of Tochen. So if that's the case, there are also Rishonim, and this is also debatable, so it's always difficult when you ask a kasha of some views based on some views, but nonetheless, it says that there are views that Tochen only applies to something that's not Nechal Chai, while Bishul likely applies if it's something that is Nechal Chai. But why should we have a different standard for Bishul than for Tochen? Right, a lot of the time, the first semester, we often asked Bishul versus Zoreah, that kept coming up, right? Differences between the structure of planting and the structure of cooking, they seem to clash a lot. So now, Bishul and Tochen, today especially, we'll see a lot of bouncing one off the other. So why is it when it comes to Bishul, the malacha is there even if the food could have been edible otherwise? While when it comes to Tochen, it's only going to apply to food that is not edible until it is cooked following your being tochen. Does anybody want to take a guess? Guess at what he would answer? How he distinguishes?
Tochen is only lo-nei-tochen?
Right. Which again is not necessarily what we've been passing as we discussed yesterday, but it seems to be a view of Rishonim. Right? Many Rishonim did seem to see it like that. So why should that be? Tochen only applies in that case, and Bishul applies regardless. Jonathan?
I think I had a backwards logic.
Maybe that'll help get into frontwards. Okay, Sam, you want?
Because Bishul is about improving the object.
Okay, right.
And Tochen may not be about improving the object if we're coming off the syllabus, but perhaps he would suggest that it's about changing the object.
So that is along the way to what he says. It's
not
a component.
Just,
it's
not just bettering, but like totally different.
So therefore,
something that is edible raw can become better, even though it's edible raw.
You're saying so Bishul is, right, so that's closer to what he says, that basically Bishul, tell me if this is what you're getting at, that Bishul essentially is going to be an enhancement one way or another. Bishul is a demonstrable change. So if you cook something, even if it didn't need to be cooked in order to be edible, that's still going to be a noticeable change. While when it comes to tochen, it's not automatically a significant change. Simply cutting something up into smaller pieces doesn't necessarily have any inherent significance. So when you're taking something that's not usable in its current form, and you're making it cookable, okay, that's a significant change. But if it was already usable, so you're not necessarily doing anything so significant. So it's not the same thing as what the Ragachaver says, but it's along the same lines, that in order for it to be considered a malacha, it has to have some significant status change. So whether it's the Ragachaver's version that it has to take on a whole new identity. And by the way, the Ragachaver has various proofs, some of which we found in the Maror Makomos last week, that flour and grain are completely different entities, different brachos, different status for many purposes. So that type of a change is more dramatic. So here the Eglei Tal is not necessarily saying that we need that per se, but we need something that's going to be significant. And when it comes to Bishul, it's easier to have significance. Cooking is definitely something different. But grinding something or cutting something into smaller pieces, to whatever extent we say that is tochen, so that's only going to be significant if it actually does something that wasn't there before. Hi. Okay. Parenthetically, the Menchas Chinuch seems to take the approach that tochen in general is not an ochlin malachim. We discussed that last week also, that maybe tochen davka is not really about ochlin. Maybe that has to do with the Mishkan model, especially if you focus on Samamonim, if you focus on the dyes. So it could be that something that's not Nechal Chai, something that's not edible right now, because it's waiting to be cooked, maybe that enters a category of pre-Ochlin. Maybe pre-Ochlin is different than Ochlin. That might just be a quirk, that maybe Tochen specifically has to apply only at a stage when it is either, if we use the Samamonim model, not Ochlin at all, maybe. And so that was a little bit debatable. Or if we use the Lechem Aponim model, at least it's still pre-Ochlin. So maybe Tochen has just a Mishkan connection to Davka being something which is pre-Ochlin and something which is Nechal Chai, which is ready to be eaten, maybe misses just on the Mishkanian connection. That might be simply a quirk. So within this idea that you need to have something a little more absolute, something a little bit more reasonable, I mean a little bit noticeable, so there are those who suggest that maybe there are differences within tochen, that maybe I can do different gradations of tochen. I can cut something up into smaller pieces, so maybe that is a tolda of tochen, that has what in common with tochen. But by itself, that's not going to be enough. That has to be a preparation for Bishul, let's say. But if I were to effect a more absolute change in something, let's say really grinding something and making it into dust, whether or not we call it kemach and chitin, but whatever, really grinding something into a whole new stage of existence, so maybe that's going to be more objectively a malach.
Hi. So let's say, for example, baby food.
Ah, so
puree versus cutting. I mean,
yes.
Cutting tomato, that's fine, but like puree tomato is obviously completely
Ah, so the Chazon Ish says exactly that. And we talked about that a little bit yesterday. We didn't get into it into detail because we were just talking about how it comes up in some of the Halachal Maisa discussion, but that may very well be the case. That may very well be such an example. So before we get to that, just there is this one contemporary sefer. It's called Tal Desha. Again, I don't necessarily expect people to remember the name, but I'm throwing out there just giving a couple of Shem Omro. I forgot his name. See, there you go. But the sefer is called Tal Desha. So he suggests that that's why, if you notice, as Mechon Chima points out, so we spent some time last week talking about how the Rambam says tochein kidei levashlo. It has this emphasis on the purpose of cooking. And he says that a couple times. But he doesn't say it always. In Perek Zayin, in Perek Chof Aleph, he says it, in Perek Ches he doesn't. And what he wants to suggest, with Tal Desha, is that there are different types of tochein. That if you're just cutting vegetables into smaller pieces, so then it has to really be for another purpose. It has to accomplish something. It has to be kidei levashlo. But if you're really going to pulverize something, you're really going to make something into dust, so then one could say that's a demonstrable change, similar to an act of bishul, and that could be considered significant, even if it's not preparation for another stage. So that's really apparently the basis of the chumrah of the Chazon Ish, as David just correctly pointed out. That we mentioned a little bit yesterday, without getting into detail, that there was a machlokas aposkim about how to address the question of mashing up food. And we mentioned baby food and pureeing. So the Chazon Ish was of the view that what you call risuk, what you call basically mashing up, is more chomer than normal tochen. Cutting something up into pieces, so that's one thing. But really, mashing it up, really making it into a whole new consistency, that's a more intense form of tochen. And that, he feels, is a problem even la'altar. Right, we discussed yesterday that there are those who disagree. And even those who agree will still say you can do it beheter if you do it machinery. So you could take the back end of a knife or a fork or a spoon and do it that way. So still a heter way to do it. But nonetheless, Chazon Ish was not willing to be makel on this even ma'alter because he feels that this is a whole new gedder of tochein. That apparently, it's exactly like David says, that it's one thing to just cut something up into smaller pieces. But to actually change its consistency, so now it used to be adult food, now it's baby food, because of the differences between the two that need to be there. So that's a significant difference, and that's really an act of tochen, which won't even have a head to la'alter. Why not? If in other cases we find that tochen is mutter la'alter, so maybe this is not considered to be derech achila, maybe this is preparation that you do before achila. Similar to, we saw a discussion by Schita. Right, that maybe squeezing out juice beforehand, even though it might be something you do for the purpose of eating seconds later, but still it's a preparation you could do earlier. So too, the Chazon Ish wasn't ready to call this mutter even la'alter. Certainly did think it was a tochein issue and not even a tochein issue, that was mutter la'alter. Again, there's a hefty way to do it, but he was concerned about that. And the Egle Tal, so happens, the Egle Tal seems to disagree. The Egle Tal understands, sort of ironically based on the Rambam, that the definition of tochein is to separate things into separate parts. And here, they're all connected. Right? The idea when something mashed up is going to be problematic, according to the Egle Tal's view, and later poskim followed him, but a number of later poskim did follow him, is if you have internal substances that separate from each other, discussed this yesterday, and they're just held together now by the outer liquefied coating. But if it's the same thing, spread out, so then that's not going to be tochein, because according to the Rambam, it's got to be broken up into separate pieces. So it's interesting, I'll take a question in a second, is what emerges here is that you have two diametrically opposed views of tochein. What's worse, basically? Breaking something up into pieces without mashing it, or mashing it, leaving it as one piece? If you focus on the Rambam and the Egle Tal's view, it's davka worse to separate it into other pieces. And the Chazon Ish is saying the complete opposite, that breaking it up into smaller pieces, yeah, that's probably tochen too. But it'd be a tolda, maybe it's mutter l'alter, it maybe only has the requirement of kidei l'vashlo, if that's really an issue. But chopping something up, a risuk, really mashing it, that's going to be a more chumer version of tochen. So you see, they're diametrically opposite views. What's worse? Is it worse to mash things up and leave them basically connected? Or is it worse to leave things in their same form but in smaller pieces? So two diametrically opposed views of which one is more tochen. And they don't necessarily get considered on the same equation. They're basically, they're addressing two different aspects of what tochen is about. That the tzura of tochen, which normally involves breaking things into smaller pieces. So that's more there when we're talking about chopping up a vegetable, let's say. But the essence of tochen, of really transforming one substance into another, that's more there when you're mashing something up, even if it basically remains connected. So I think was Jonathan the only one up? Hi.
There's a couple questions. So firstly,
yeah.
I think we already addressed it, just wasn't clear. So according to this, the Eglital and even some of the Panayot, how they understand the Rambam, that all sort of implies that the Gemara was giving toldos and not avos. How are we able to sort of explain that?
Why the Gemara chose to give toldos?
Yeah.
Yeah, that we could ask that question on a lot of things in our Gemara. In our Gemara, we'd love to say that our Gemara, in a very organized fashion, lays down the yisodos of all the malachos top down, but it's clearly not the case. You know, so it would be nice if it did. But this idea that the Gemara is telling us toldos is explicit in the Rambam and other Rishonim, and it's consistent with a lot of other premises. So as much as we maybe wouldn't have organized the Shas that way, it's very likely the case that the Gemara is only telling us told us.
And then also, in terms of when we mentioned the Shuvas yesterday, how we said, I think it was Dr. Korpernes who would say, even according to the Chazon Ish, even Mati, let's say, the case with the mashed potato, whether it's or not, how would that help according to him, even cooking it, even like Ramosh is saying?
Yeah, cooking it already halfway changes the form.
So that's why, because it already changed.
It's a difficult view, and the Shmir Shabbos Kilchus also seems to feel that way. Working that out with Ramosha is difficult, because Ramosha clearly doesn't feel that way. I was discussing it actually with Ruth Miller yesterday, and he was very emphatic that Ramosha does not allow that. Maybe we'll come back to that point a little bit. But in any event, just as far as our understanding of what the Malach is about, so it's an interesting illustration, this mashing point, again, taking it together with chopping up vegetables, so which one is more chumer than the other, each one emphasizes a different aspect of what tochen is about. Sam, do you have a question?
Yeah. Isn't flour one piece? I mean, it clumps. It's not
necessarily
separable.
Yeah, but you could pick it up and it's going to fall through your hands. I guess mashed potatoes will also, but just because they're loose.
So bananas, so everything. Meaning the flour, if we're going to use flour as the model, so then it doesn't really separate into so many separate pieces.
I mean, it separates
into,
like, even if some clump together, you still have a lot of pieces. You know, I guess it's true if you pick up the mashed bananas, they'll fall apart also, but if you just go like this, they're not necessarily going to fall apart, but the flour will. The flour really is a distinct entity. So now that's, and again, our emphasis is that it's really a different identity, more than it's separate. It's also separate. But the key issue that we're interested in about flour is that it really takes on a whole different identity, a different bracha, a different status. Okay, so this really does segue very strongly into the question of tochen after tochen. And let's see if we can get a lot of that discussed today, if not all of this. So we saw already hints of this a little bit. We've had a little bit of an introduction to this topic, that there is a view which is popular in Rishonim and popular in Psak, but not unanimous. Certainly not unanimous among the Rishonim, as we'll see. And it's complicated when it gets to Psak. And that is this idea of Ein Tochen Acher Tochen. And in terms of Psak, after the Rishonim, the one who really put this on the table, I guess semi-literally, is the Ramah, right? The Ramah puts this out there. Yeah, it's a couple of levels of literalness and metaphoricness. So the Ramah is the one who enters this into the code of Jewish law, however you want to put it, because the Ramah tells us when it comes to bread that it is permissible to break bread into small pieces because Ein Tochen Acher Tochen. Now, we'll try to discuss this in stages, The first question to ask before we try to understand what it's about a little bit is, do all the Rishonim agree with this? Do all Rishonim say, Ein Tochen Acher Tochen? Who do we know does agree with this? Yosef, that the Rishonim quote.
Yeah.
Right, like the Hagos Maimonides quotes him, right? Who else do we know who agrees with this? Yireim, right? Yireim agrees with this. What'd you say?
The Rivash.
The Rivash is a little bit of a challenge because Rivash brings in something that we have to work in. We have to figure out if he agrees with this or not. The Shoal talks about it in the Rivash. Right, so you have to. The Rivash may or may not agree with it. So, but who do we know does agree with this? The Rashba probably disagrees. Right. So why? It was a good try. But why? Why does the Rashba? Because the Rashba agrees with the Psak. That's why the Rashba, in a sense, agrees. But the problem is, he overtly gives a different reason. Right. So it's a little, we'll hold off on it for a second. We try to figure out who disagrees. But who else agrees? So the Ran agrees. Right. The Ran quotes the Rashba, which is another reason why. Sounds like you might agree. The Ran who quotes the Rashba says this principle of Ein Tochen Acher Tochen. And here's a blast from the past. Well, actually, also probably literally. The Balamor. Anyone remember which Balamor I'm talking about? It's the Balamor we discussed some time ago. Sorry? The Balamor, it's not in the Masechet Shabbos. Balamor in Pesachim. How? Anyone remember? Because the Balamor.
Oh, Zora.
Right. We talked about the context of Zora. Is that a hint? Does that jog in anybody's memory?
Because,
yeah, basically, the issue was we were trying to figure out whether or not we passed like Yerushalmi. Right? Yerushalmi, we talked about Zora and throwing something to the wind. If you're not interested in dividing it up into useful parts, is that an act of Zora or not? And Yerushalmi seemed to say that it was. And a lot of the Rishonim did not paskin that way. And we noted that the Balamor, who the Bach follows, explicitly didn't paskin that way. Why? Because what does the Balamor say? The Balamor says that if Erev Pesach, Shechal Lios B'Shabbos, you have Chametz, maybe you Davka should have Chametz, maybe you want to fulfill Tashbisu on Erev Pesach, Shechal Lios B'Shabbos, maybe we'll talk about that closer to Pesach time, but you maybe purposely held on to chametz until Erev Pesach. So now, how do you get rid of it? So the Balamor says, Bahalacha, right? That you can get rid of it by crumbling it up and throwing it into the wind. So we got distracted from that part because when we talked about that Balamor, we were just interested in the question of whether you could throw it to the wind. But what does it say before throwing it into the wind? Crumble up the bread. So it sounds like the Balamor agrees that you can crumble up the bread and throw it up in the air. Now, you might say, well, listen, a lot of Rishonim agree you can crumble up bread for different reasons. So maybe don't necessarily agree Ein Tochen Acher Tochen, except it's not clear that any of those other reasons are going to apply here. So it's likely that that Balamor also agrees with this view of the Ran and the Yireim and the Reb Yosef and the Rashbam and a few others that there's no issur to crumble up bread because Ein Tochen Acher Tochen. Sammy?
I mean, isn't that also
so Makom Mitzvah is not going to allow a deraisa, right?
Hey, it's not though. It's Ochlan. So therefore, right, and he's not doing and.
But Ochlan is deraisa by. Ochlan on the surface seems to be deraisa. It's a question of what the key model of. We have to figure out. We say.
Rambam, he's saying, you know, if it would be.
It's not Levashel.
It's not, well, two Levashel is only a Tolda.
Right.
So if we're not to
the
Atolda,
the Daraisa. So you say Malachshin is Shvichel Gufa by Atolda.
For sure.
Right, you could say some
fancy. Sorry?
Even if Dav Malachshin is Shvichel Gufa by Atolda. Okay, you could say some fancy if you're assuming that's Malachshin is Shvichel Gufa, right, which is likely the case because you're not interested in the parts to be used. So it's an interesting point. Okay, it's something to consider. But without getting into the fancy Torahs, which may be true, it does seem on the surface that here the Balamor says you can crumble up bread and throw it to the wind. And both those parts are potentially malachas, and yet he allows them. So which Rishonim maybe don't agree? So the first way to assume a Rishonim doesn't agree is if he has a different heter for bread. Right, so one Rishon who explicitly has a different heter for bread was the aforementioned Rashba, because right, the Rashba in the Tshuva So he, again, everybody's distractible because they're all noteworthy for other reasons. So this is just what we said about Balamor until now was noteworthy because of his Zohar position, so we don't pay attention to his Tochen statement there. So too, this is the same Rashba we've been talking about who was noteworthy for his Kula. Right? He's noteworthy for telling us that Tochen is Mutter La'alter. It's Mutter for immediate use. And Shulte Gibarim argued on that. So we're so focused on that part of the Rashba where he's fighting Muhammad Hashem to allow Tochen La'alter, that what we don't pay attention to is that he's also saying a Chumrah. He's saying that we need that Heder for allowing bread, and that otherwise bread wouldn't be Mutter. So therefore, apparently, Ein Tochen Acher Tochen doesn't apply according to him. And therefore, L'halacha L'maisa, not only would it be questionable to expand it to other things, but also, even with bread, he has the condition of La'alter, which the other Rishonim wouldn't have. He wouldn't need a La'alter usage because there's no Isser Tochen to begin with. So it seems like the Rashba disagrees with the principle. Also seems like the Ra'ah, we also saw that one already, that again, everybody comes in through a back door, so you don't see how they apply here. But the Ran quoted the Ra'ah, we talked about him last week, that bread is mutter because we only have tochen by something that still needs another stage of development, like bishul. So once again, giving a different reason to allow bread is an indication that you don't sign on to the whole tochen acher tochen svar. Who else may not hold this? Hi.
Well, question.
Yeah.
What's the rationale behind you talking about?
Oh, that's the next step of our discussion. So we're not going to that yet. So that's very much what we're just trying to set the stage for. Hi.
Just two quick questions. I think I missed somebody who agreed. It was Rabbi Yosef, the Ran, and the Baal Mor, and who was the fourth?
The Rashbam. Some of the Rishonim quote.
And then
Yireyim, the Ran.
Okay, and then about this Ra'ah, let's say you would take bread and you would want to use it, you would break it up in order to use it in a recipe, like maybe breadcrumbs.
Right.
And that would be something that would be Tzarech Bishul.
Yeah, so that's what we saw last week, that the phrase Tzarech Bishul leaves us with some ambiguity. We saw three different ways to understand it, right? That either things that always need Bishul, something that's not Nechel Chai, or something that you're practically going to be mevashel, maybe regardless of whether it's Nechal Chai, or something that needs another stage of preparation, maybe Lav Davka Bishul. So I think there's some ambiguity as to what it means, and then maybe we could say a svara for all of them. Okay, so what about the Rambam? Does the Rambam agree or disagree? So if you saw today's Mar Makomos, there's at least one commentary on the page in the Rambam, or the Nosei Kalim, one of the later Nosei Kalim, who thinks the Rambam doesn't agree.
Mishnah
Malach, correct, right? Mishnah Malach, you don't have to agree with this Mishnah Malach. He comes about it in a kind of a roundabout way, but the Mishnah Malach, who in general is one of the more lamdisha Nosei Kalim on the Rambam, if you're familiar with his writings, it's a little bit of a different style. The Lecha Mishnah and the Kesef Mishnah are more about telling you the Makoros of the Rambam and giving you other Shittas Rishonim. Mishnah Malach is really the Lamdan on the page. He's really the one who's more creative. So the Mishnah Melech deals with a question which Reb Chaim Brisker made famous last year, if you learned the Psachim. So this was one of the first sugyas in the second parak of Psachim. The question is, the Rambam says, theoretically, a person could get Malkus for owning Chametz on Pesach. And the kasha comes up that normally any Lav Hanita Klase, if you can undo, if you can negate the Lav, there's no Malkus. So the question is, why don't we say a person owns Chametz on Pesach, but he can destroy the Chametz, he can fulfill Tashbisu. So is there a scenario where a person in Mamish can't destroy the Chametz on Pesach? So the Mishnah Melech assumes that the Rambam, by saying that there's at least theoretically a scenario where a person could be subject to Malkus for buying Chametz on Pesach, he's got to believe that there's a situation where a person cannot get out of owning Chametz. Yeah, he owns Chametz now, and there's nothing he can do about it. So maybe that's a situation where it's Shvi Yishol Pesach, and it gets into a whole discussion, Shvi Yishol Pesach Chalios B'Shabbos, would this be true only on Yantif, only on Shabbos, or also on Yantif? So without getting into that, but it's Shvi Yishol Pesach, let's say it's also Shabbos. So essentially, apparently the Rambam is going to hold, there's no way to get at it, no way to get rid of the chametz that you own. So why not? What about the whole Zorah L'Ruach? Why can't we crumble it up and throw it to the wind? So he assumes that the Rambam doesn't agree, not allowed to do it. And he says over there that even though the Rashbam, I think, is the one he quotes, maybe a few other Rishonim, that do say, Ein Tochen Acher Tochen, that there is a heter for bread, the Rambam apparently doesn't hold from it. Now, that is not at all a unanimous take on the Rambam. And many, for example, work on trying to figure out why the Rambam applies Tochen to metal based on Ein Tochen Acher Tochen. So if you're not worried about the Rambam's view here at all, you don't have to deal with that so much. So if you want to just take him out of the conversation, then you don't have to worry about that example so much. So it's not unanimous, the assumption that the Rambam doesn't agree with this. The Egle Tal, for example, asks that question. How does the Rambam's view square with that? But the Mishlo Melech, at least for one, thought that the Rambam doesn't agree with this. Okay. So, to lay that out a little bit, so fine, so we have essentially what seems to be a machlokus Rishonim, a good chunk of the Rishonim saying there is such a principle in Tochen after Tochen, the Ramah recording this Lahalacha, and the Ramah recording this Halacha in at least one place, probably more than one place, right? But the place where he for sure records this Lahalacha is in the context of what we just spoke about, this psak about bread. So, before going further, and we'll see how much time we have to fully flesh this out, maybe we'll have to continue it a little bit tomorrow. We'll have to continue a little bit tomorrow, but let's at least try to get the basics out. So, we want to try to figure out, as David asked a few minutes, what's the rationale? What's the reason for saying Ein Tochen Acher Tochen? And that's going to affect how it applies, big time. Now, in general, if somebody wants to give a shiur, wants to be dramatic. So very often the way to do that, right, is to ask all the kashas first and leave everybody wondering what's going on, and then you dramatically resolve that. So besides the time limitation, that's not why I don't want to do it that way right now, but it also sometimes is a little more confusing. And I think for the sake of clarity, it's sometimes easier to go backwards. So this sugya specifically, it's easier to approach Jeopardy style and try to figure out what the answers could be. And then you could look at the possible questions and see whether or not they're still questions, see whether or not they bother you. So there are a number of objections that are raised to this principle of Ein Tochen Acher Tochen. We mentioned some of the Rambams don't seem to fit with it. Maybe the Rivash, talking about cheese, doesn't fit with it. Maybe. Maybe some Sakhmas Shulchan Aruch don't fit with it. So before going into detail with any of the questions, let's try to work backwards. Let's try to talk about some of the potential answers in terms of how this principle could be defined. And then we can try to see how everything plugs in and see whether or not the possible questions are still questions or are they pre-answered for us. So in order to do that, so there are two stages. And we'll certainly do one of them, maybe two of them. If we don't do the second one, we'll start with it tomorrow. But two questions I want to ask are, first of all, what's the metzias? What kind of cases bring up questions of Ein Tochen and Acher Tochen? What do the words mean? Because, as you see from some of the way it's fleshed out, there are at least three different scenarios at which you could be raising an issue, raising an objection of Ein Tochen and Acher Tochen. David, you want to address that?
I mean, well, literally, like once you do crush something to pieces,
okay, so you could mean, so without talking about the literalness of the impossibility of doing it, but you could mean that once you have done tochen to something, and let's say it somehow got back together again, or it somehow became a bigger point, so to deal with your impossibility factor, now it's somehow reconstituted. Now the question is, can you re-tochen it? Right, so that seems like the simplest definition of tochen acher tochen. You did tochen to something, now it is somehow in a larger form, whether you want to say it's an original form or it's a different type of larger form, like bread, right? So now the question is, can you be tochen it again? That's one kind of scenario where you might say, no, we tochen our tochen. This already has had a process of tchina. There's no tchina that can happen to it again. Adam?
For those who say that mash it up, that's what tochen is. Doesn't tochen after tochen imply that that can't be?
Does, why? Because maybe the substance you're dealing with never was subject to tchina in the first place.
Well,
like bananas or potatoes.
I'm saying mashing it up, once it gets to that state, there can't, I mean, just physically, there can't be anything smaller than that.
So you're saying that if that's the definition of tochen, then we wouldn't have a discussion of tochen after
that. How can that be the definition of tochen, to mash it up, if there is a, oh, if everyone agrees that there's a possibility of tochen after tochen?
Well, a couple of ways, because one is that you could say it's not the only definition of tochen, which I don't think anyone thinks is the only definition of tochen. But also, maybe there's some way you could mash something and it somehow becomes reconstituted. And somehow you glue it back together again and you let it dry, so now it's full. So that's the first type of scenario we could be talking about, right? Something was ground up. It was small pieces. It was a big piece. It became small pieces. Now it's a big piece again. Is there an issue with tochen? That's one scenario. Sammy, you want to suggest another scenario? You want to address that?
Yeah, different levels.
Yes?
Like,
oh.
There's tochen, and then there's tochen.
Okay, so that's the second scenario, right? An equally valid one. Maybe you have something which was subject to a process of tchina. It was made into smaller pieces, and that was tochen. It was done during the week, it was done on Shabbos, Pesach, or whatever it was. It was done naturally, it was done, it had the tochen done to it. And it didn't come back together again. But the question is, can you take it to another level? Is there a possibility of taking these small pieces and grinding them up even further? So can there be another act of tochen in addition to its current tochen state? And so that also addresses your impossibility question, right? So David first raised the point that it seems like it's impossible. How could you do tochen twice? So now we just answered in two ways. Either because it came back together again, or it didn't come back together again, but it went further. The small pieces became very small. Sammy?
I don't know.
So a third one, which is an important one, because it underlies a lot of the questions, a lot of the objections that get raised, is what if you have something which is not in a natural form. It was never actively broken up. There was never a tochen that happened to it. But it was not naturally together. It was brought together, let's say, by human involvement. We'll see there's some distinctions to be raised. Let's say it was brought together by human involvement. And now it's being chopped up. Should tochen apply to that? So there are those who will say, no, ain't tochen after tochen, understanding that tochen only applies to something that's never been in smaller pieces. But if you took smaller pieces and made something new, even if they started off small, there shouldn't be an issue of tochen. For example, just to show you a case where this gets confusing, is the cheese case. Right? Cheese is not something that was ground up once and now the question is, can you grind it up again? It was never ground up in the first place. It was made up of smaller pieces put together. And yet, when it comes to grinding cheese, there are those who will object. No, no problem. Ain't tochen acher tochen. So what's their understanding of ain't tochen acher tochen? Not that there ever was a tchina here, but that tochen only applies when something is in a natural form of bigger going to smaller. And that's both confusing, but also very important. And you find this distinction, by example, we mentioned that there was at least one Rama that asserts this principle, but there's probably a second Rama also in Shulchan Aruch. Talking about what? Remember, see the second Rama? Here, he doesn't say tochen after tochen, but the Mishnah Berurah puts that into his words. Salt, right? So the Rama says that you have salt, which is clumped together. So you can break that up, says the Mishnah Berurah, because ain't tochen after tochen. So what does that mean? Was the salt ever ground at the beginning? So it's not clear if the salt was ever ground to begin with. This is significantly confusing. Because there are two kinds of salt, right? But the Ramah doesn't talk about the two kinds of salt. Mishnah Berurah says, Ein tochen acher tochen. And Mishnah Berurah also adds another example from the Prima Gadda. He says the same thing is true about sugar. So it also, first of all, depends on what kind of salt. So if you want to get really technical about this, so the Ramah quotes the Kolbo as his source. And if you look in the Kolbo, so the Kolbo actually refers to two different types of salt. And there's one type of salt where there's no iser of tochen at all. And there's another type of salt, so the salt, there's another type of salt where there's no iser of tochen at all, has a foreign language name, like shmuyi, shlishu, it's different than Rishonim, have it a little bit differently. So it's got a slushy sound to it. We'll call it that for now, even though it's apparently not slushy-like at all. But that's the different Rishonim have it a little bit differently. Because if you saw Tosfos in Beit Sadaf Yudalit, which is just an easier source than the Kolbo, has a very similar distinction, uses a slightly different word for this kind of salt. It says there is a certain type of salt which there's no iser of tochen at all. And then there's a type of salt, Melach Shel Yam, so the sea salt, which apparently comes in pumps, that there is apparently an iser tochen, but you can do it all yidei shinui. So you have to work around the iser of tochen. So what's the issue? Why is one type of salt not subject to tochen? The one from the water really is the one that...
man-made.
So it's man-made. So how is it man-made?
It wasn't naturally.
But it wasn't made in a laboratory, right? It came from... It was chopped off of the ground.
Why would the ground be subject to
salt? So apparently, and this is the way Rav Nachman Gestetner explains it in his Sefer Talmosa, that the process of chopping it off of the ground is itself ketisha, is itself an act of tochen. So therefore, that type of salt had a tchina done to it beforehand. So that's why there's no iser to be tochen it again afterwards.
We wouldn't say that's kosher. It's
not.
It's not
growing. Yeah. The type, you know, this you have salt on the ground. You have to chop it off. So that process is ketisha. So that's a tchina. But the sea salt, that was never broken up. So therefore, that's not free of tochen. There is an iser tochen, and that only works when there is a shinui. Shall we? So that does it sounds like it's talking about sea salt, yeah, because there, in the Imor context, the salt lands over there on the beach, and then the sun evaporates the water and it's left lying there, but it came from the sea. Yeah. Hi.
Just cutting something up is, meaning, already many people would say that cutting up something into small pieces would be tochen.
Right.
Who says that if you would take like a cucumber and cutting it in half, that's tochen?
Well, it depends on your definition of duck or small pieces. It could be. It's a subjective definition of what small pieces are. I mean, probably not, but...
That's what I'm saying. Meaning
it's not out of the...
Cut out from the ground. That's not...
That's a lot of small pieces. No, getting it out of the ground means really grinding it off of the ground where it is. So that's really a process of cleanup. But what's very instructive...
Take out like a chunk of ground like they would do with a rock.
You kind of have to chip it off. So the chip
yeah,
off.
Like a hole.
I mean, it's not immediately granulated, but it's brought into smaller pieces. So his point is very important. His point is basically explicit in the Kolbo. But it's an important definitional issue. Because that gives us two different... Looking at the Ramah by himself, and then looking at in the Kolbo, shows you two different types of Ein Tchina Acher Tchina. That it sounds like, the way the Ramah was saying it before you see his original source, that what's the objection of Ein Tchina Acher Tchina? It's that this was salt, it started off as small pieces, and then something happened that made it bigger, it clumped together. So maybe there's no Tchina in such a case. Tchina is only when something starts big, you make it small. If something starts small, becomes big, and you make it small, That's not subject to tchina. That's the third type, which is relevant to cheese, for example, and maybe this could have been another example of. However, see from his original source, if there is such a distinction, like the Kolbo says, and like Tosfos and Beitza says, that no, that's not the issue. It's that this salt actually did have a process of tchina. Don't think it started small, got big, and now it's becoming small again. It started big, and it was made small in order to obtain it. And so therefore, it had a process of tchina, so really, this is not the third category, this is the second category. This is something that's already been ground, and the question is, can you ground it up smaller? So basically, three different scenarios where we could raise this issue in tochen after tochen, and some may object. Some may say that number one is a valid question, number three is not a valid question. Or number two is a valid question, number three is not a valid question. And that's all going to depend on what the rationale is of ein tochen after tochen. And because of our unfortunate time limitation, we're going to have to get into that a little bit more tomorrow. But let's, we'll have a minute in a second here, but let's just quickly summarize what we spoke about today. But, we mentioned before we have to end a little bit early today, but just to quickly summarize what we spoke about. So we spoke about the Rogachev's point again about tochen being dealing with something that's made into a new substance, and how that is echoed a little bit in the Egle Tal, who says something different. But the Egle Tal, in terms of talking about why Bishul might apply even if something is edible chai, and tochen, according to some Rishonim, not, because maybe tochen only counts when it's really a significant change, because it's not really much of anything otherwise, while Bishul is always an inherent change, and therefore, even if it would have been edible without it, Bishul is still significant, and tochen, that's not necessarily the case. And that led us to discuss the fact that maybe there are different gradations of tochen. Maybe sometimes tochen does become more significant. So, for example, maybe if you really make something into little pieces, you make something granulated, so that's tochen, even not kidei levashlo, even according to the Rambam. The Rambam only says levashlo sometimes. Maybe he only says small pieces need to be for the purpose of bishul, but if you're really making it into a whole new consistency, maybe not. And we saw that's also reflected in the machlokis, the Chazon Ish, and some of the other poskim about mashing up food. But the Chazon Ish thought there was a more intense form of tochen, which is usur even la'alter, although it's mutter with a shinui, and that involves leaving something connected but broken up into small pieces, basically mashed, while other poskim disagree. And the question of which is worse, if you cut something up into small pieces but don't mash it, or if you leave it connected but you do mash it, so there's diametrically opposed opinions as to which is worse, and we saw that each one emphasized a different element of tochen. That on the one hand, the Rambam's functional definition of breaking it up into smaller pieces, that's not there by the mashing, but the idea of really changing its identity, that's more there by mashing than by cutting something up, so diametrically opposed views as to which is more of a reflection of the Isser Tochen in its ideal form. And then we went from there to the discussion of Ein Tochen after Tochen, and we noted that this seems to be a popular view, but not unanimous. A lot of Rishonim, such as the Ran, and reflected by the Ramah, and also the Rashbam, and also the Hagos Maimi, and also a few others, and the Balamor, in the context of Psachim, all seem to agree that there is a principle Ein Tochen after Tochen, and a few Rishonim don't seem to agree, primarily those who give other heterim for breaking up bread, whether it's the Rashba who focuses on the altar, or the Ra'ah in the Ran who focuses on any other Asher. And we saw the Rambam with somewhat of an open question, but the Mishnah Melech assumes that the Rambam also doesn't accept this principle of Ein Tochen after Tochen. So we decided that in order to try to understand a little bit of what it's about, so we first have to figure out what it applies to, and we noted that there are at least three different cases in which someone might raise an objection of Ein Tochen after Tochen. Now, on the one hand, something which has had a process of tochen somehow came back together again, and now you want to be tochen it again. So it was big, you made it small, now it got big again. So the question is there an issur of tochen a second time? That's scenario one. Scenario two is where something was made small, and the question is about making it smaller. So a process of tochen on top of a process of consistent tochen, the tochen was never undone, you just want to take it to the next stage. And the third scenario the question of something that was never big in the first place. It started off small, it was artificially made big, let's say by human hands, and now the question is there an issur to make that small if it wasn't created big in the first place? So in that usage, ein tochen acher tochen doesn't mean that there were two processes of tochen. It meant that tochen only applies to something in its original stage, and if it never needed tochen in the first place, then there would be no issur tochen. And we saw that the very example the Ramah brings about salt seems to be an example of that, except when you look at the source that it's based on, it actually seems to be an example of the second variation, that it went through a process of tchina earlier, so now it's a question of doing it again. So which of those scenarios apply, which don't? We'll have to discuss that tomorrow when we talk about the different rationales for this concept of ein tochen, acher tochen. Okay, so we'll daven quickly now. Maybe we'll daven with a...